Yo soy un hombre sincero, ver donde crece la fama. Antes de morir me quiero, echa mis versos del alma.
Hi, Rach Camus here, and welcome to the voice of Jose Marti. Today we're continuing to base our program on Jose Marti's selected writings, translated by Ether Allen and published by Penguin Classics in 1995. Today we read from chapter entitled Emerson. On an undated fragment found among his papers, Marti listed the afternoon of Emerson, first among the supreme moments of his life. Since he never met Emerson in person, he may have been referring to the afternoon on which he wrote this essay. Marti writes, "At times, the pen trembles like a priest capable of seeing who feels unworthy of his ministry. Agitated, the spirit takes flight and one swings to lift it, not a pen to hone and sculpt it like a chisel. Writing is pain, abasement. It jokes a condor to a cart. For when a great man vanishes from the earth, he leaves behind him a poor clarity, a hunger for peace, a hatred of noise. The universe seems a temple. The city's commerce, the tumult of life, and the commotion of men, a profanation. There is a sprouting of wings, a vanishing of feet. Life goes on, but as if by the light of a star, as if seated in the middle of white flowers. A soft, fresh luminescence fills in the immense, silent atmosphere. All is summit, and we are atop it. The earth lies at our feet, wrapped in shadow like some distant world once long ago visited. And these wagons that go rumbling by, these hawkers with their loud cries, these tall chimneys blasting their powerful whistles into the air, all the to and fro, the strutting, arguing, and living of mankind strikes us in our pure and kerosene retreat at the sound of a barbarous army that invades our mountain tops, tramples our footfields, and in its rage rends us under the great shadow behind which looms, like a colossal battlefield where warriors made of stone wear golden armor and bear red spears, the tumultuous and resplendent city. Emerson is dead, and sweet tears fill the eyes. The news brings envy, not pain. The breast fills not with anguish, but with tenderness. Death is a victory. When a person has lived well, the hearse is a triumphal chariot. Our tears are of pleasure, not mourning, for rose petals already cover the wounds that life made of the dead man's hands and feet. The death of a just man is a celebration. All the earth passes to watch the parting of the heavens, and the faces of men are radiant with hope, and in their arms they carry bundles of palm fronds to carpet the ground, and with their swords they make a high arch beneath which the body of the victorious warrior passes, covered with buffs of oak and golden straw. The man who gave fully of himself and did good unto others goes to his rest, while the man who labored badly in this life goes to labor anew. And the young warriors, having watched these envious eyes, the passage of the great victor, whose warm corpse glows with all the greyness of repose, turn back to the stacks of the living, to make themselves worthy of their own palm fronds and arches. You ask who he was, this man who has died. The whole world knows who he was. He was a man who found himself alive, and shook from his shoulders and his eyes all the mantles and blindfolds that the past cast over man. A man who lived face to face with nature as if all the world were in his home, and the sun his own sun, and he a patriarch. He was one of those to whom nature reveals herself and opens and stretches out her many arms as if to envelop the whole body of her child in them. He was one of those to whom the utmost wisdom, the utmost serenity, and the utmost delight are given. All of nature thrilled before him like a bride, and he lived in happiness because he bestowed his loves beyond the earth. The whole of his life was a awakening from a wedding night. What raptures his soul knew, what visions his eyes saw, what tablets of laws his book are, what flights of angels his poems. He was a reserved, slender child who reminded those who saw him of a young eagle, a young pine. Later, he was serene, kind, and radiant. Adults and children would stop to watch him go by. His step was firm, the step of a man who knows where he must go. His body was tall and frail, like a tree whose crown sways in the pure breezes. His visage was lean, that of a man made for detachment and eager to venture beyond himself. His forehead was like the slope of a mountain, his nose like the beak of a bird that soars above mountain peaks, and his eyes were captivating, for they were brimming with love and calm, the eyes of one who has seen the unseen. All who saw him felt a desire to kiss his forehead. For Carlyle, the great English philosopher who turned against the earth with the strength and brilliance of Satan, Emerson's visit was a celestial vision. For Whitman, who has discovered a new poetry in nature, to see Emerson was to spend a blessed hour. For Stedman, a good critic, there was a white light in the wise man's village. For Alcott, a noble, youthful old man who thinks and sings, it seemed a misfortune not to have known him. People left his eyes as if coming away from leaving a monument or supreme being. Some men are like mountains. They leave the earth flat before and behind them. He was not familiar, but he was tender, for his was an imperial family whose members all had to be emperors. He loved his friends as if they were cherished women. For him, friendship had something of the solemnity of twilight in a forest. Love is superior to friendship in that it creates children. Friendship is superior to love in that it does not create desires, or the awareness of having satisfied them, or the sorrow of abandoning the temple of stated desires for that of new desires. Around him was enchantment. His voice was heard as if it were the voice of a messenger from the future speaking from amid incandescent louds. An impalpable thread made of moonlight seemed to bind the men who gathered to listen to him together. The wise went to see him and came away rejoicing and chastened. Young men walked many miles to see him, and he received those tremulous pilgrims with a smile and bade them sit around his sturdy mahogany table piled with large books and served them fine aged sherry, attending to them like a servant. And those who read him but do not understand him accuse him of a lack of tenderness because, accustomed to permanent commerce with grandeur, he saw his personal affairs as small, random, and inessential, undeserving of narration. These petty poets, with their Jeremiads, are no more than the phrenes of their own pain. Men must be told of things that are worthy of men and capable of exalting them. To go about telling of one's own little pains in soothing rhymes is a task fit only for ants. Pain must be modest. And well, that's it from me for today on The Voice of Jose Marti. I'm Rach Gámez. Guantanamera, once more.